Last week, we studied about rupa vachara, chetas, form sphere consciousness. I told you how a jhana is attained, what to practice, and also I think I told you about the difference between jhana factors, and jhana consciousness. Now, among the 10 kasinas, I think kala kasina is easier to make. So if you want to try kasina meditation, you can try one of the kala kasinas. This is white kasina. So you may make something like this if you want to practice kasina meditation. Now, do not put blue, red, or yellow around it, because there are 4 colors, blue, red, yellow, and white. So this is white kasina. So it should look something like this. But it should not be smaller than this. If it is too small, then it's difficult to keep your mind there. So, by the practice of kasina meditation or some other meditation which leads to the attainment of jhanas, say a yogi, a meditator attains jhana consciousness. These jhana consciousness are accompanied by mental factors, and among them, 5 are called factors of jhana. Jhana factors. And the first jhana is accompanied by 5 jhana factors. So those are vitaka, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. So I want you to get them in Pali. So on the English side also, I put the Pali words because they take less space. So what is vitaka? They are all mental factors, and so we'll be studying these again in the second chapter. But I think a little of it will do here. So what is vitaka? It is translated as initial application. That means initial application of mind to the object. Now, in the discourses, vitaka, the word vitaka is used to mean thoughts. But in Abhidhamma, it means not just thought. It means a mental factor that mounts the mind onto the object, or that takes the mind onto the object, that directs the mind onto the object. So that mental factor is called vitaka in Abhidhamma as a technical term. But in the suttas, you may find vitaka used for thoughts, like vitaka santana sutta, to still distracting thoughts. So vitaka is a mental factor which takes the mind, takes the consciousness, takes the chitta to the object. That means, without vitaka, it is difficult for the chitta to get onto the mind. Many chittas need vitaka for them to take to the object. But there are some that do not need vitaka. They will come later. Okay, that is vitaka. And vichara means investigating or pondering upon, something like that. But here, vichara means not that. Again, as a technical term in Abhidhamma, vichara is a mental factor, which is here translated as sustained application. So that means, first, vitaka takes the consciousness to the object, and then vichara keeps it there. So vitaka and vichara are two different mental factors, say, which are concerned with taking the mind to the object and then keeping it there. But it may seem that vitaka comes first and then vichara follows it. But in actual occurrence, they arise at the same time. So here, with this jhana consciousness also, they arise at the same time. Now, vitaka and vichara, the difference between vitaka and vichara is given in the manual. Now, page 57. The commentaries about 5 or 6 lines down from the top. The commentaries offer various similes to highlight the difference between these two jhana factors. Vitaka is like a bird spreading out its wings to fly. Vichara is like the birds gliding through the air with outstretched wings. So, vitaka is like the bird trying to get into the sky. And then vichara is the bird gliding through the air with the outstretched wings. So, if we take a modern simile, I think we can take the airplane. So the first takeoff, right? That is vitaka. And then when it reaches the cruise level, then it goes on and on the same way. So that is vichara. So there is first vitaka and then vichara here. And then vitaka is like a bee diving towards a flower. Vichara is like the bees buzzing above the flower. Same thing, right? So here, the bird flew down onto towards the flower, and that is like vichara is like that. I mean, vitaka is like that, and vichara is like the bee buzzing above the flower. And then, vitaka is like the hand that holds a tarnished metal dish. Vichara is like the hand that wipes the dish. So there may be some dish which is dirty and you want to clean it, and so you take hold of it with one hand and then with the other hand, with the cleaning brush or something, you rub it, you clean it. So vitaka is like the hand that holds the dish, and vichara is like the hand that rubs the dish. Okay. I don't know whether that is all. So how many similes have you got now? 3 similes. What? The bird, the bee, and the hands taking hold of and rubbing the dish. And the other similes given in the commentary are when a potter makes pots, say he turns around the wheel and make the pot, right? So when the wheel is turning, he will take hold of the clay with one hand, and then with the other hand, he may make shapes or mold it into a pot or something. So taking hold of the clay is with, like vitaka is like that, and vichara is like the other hand, making shapes or forms. And also, when you make a circle, let's say you want to make a circle on the ground, then you put it, about that, a spike, right? You put a spike in the middle, and then you use a rope, and there's another spike outside. So the The center spike, Vitaka is like center spike, and Vijara is like the spike outside. It's like going round and round and round. So there are many similes given in the commentaries to understand the difference between Vitaka and Vijara. And the third jhana factor is PT. Now this what we have to retain the Pali form. Translating it into English is never satisfactory. So it is translated as zest, so in this book, and others translated as joy and rapture, happiness, pleasurable interest. So there are many, many translations for this one word, PD. So it is always good to retain the Pali word, even if you use the English translation. So, for example, if you use the word joy for PD, then you use joy and then within parentheses, put the word Pali word PD, so that the people do not misunderstand. So PD is derived from a verb P, meaning to refresh. So when you have PD, you are like refreshed. And it is a pleasurable interest in the object. In the manual, it is said, the term is often translated as rapture, a rendering which fits role as a jhana factor, but may not be wide enough to cover all its nuances. So it is better to retain the Pali. Now, there are five kinds of PD given in the commentaries, and they are also given in the manual. So I want you to read them. The commentators distinguish five grades of PD that arise when developing concentration. Number one, minor PD. Number two, momentary PD. Number three, showering PD. Number four, uplifting PD. And number five, pervading PD. So there are five kinds of PD. Minor PD is able to raise the hairs on the body. Now, sometimes when you have PD, you may feel goose flesh, right? The hair standing on end. So that is minor PD, the lowest level of PD. And then the next one is momentary PD. It is like flashes of lightning. So once in a while, you feel that PD in your body, or also in your mind. And then the next one is showering PD. It breaks over the body again and again, like waves on the seashore. So momentary PD may come just once in a while. This showering PD may come more often, like waves as it's breaking on the seashore. And the fourth one is uplifting PD that can cause the body to levitate. Now, in the commentary, two stories are given. So one is a story of a monk who, by the power of PD, was able to fly through the air and reach the pagoda. And the other was about a woman. She was pregnant, and there was a festival, pagoda festival going on. So she wanted to go to the festival, but her parents said, you are too advanced in your pregnancy, and so you should not go there. So she had to be left at home. But she could see the festival going on from a distance, and she could also hear the chanting made by the monks at the pagoda. And so she was so joyous seeing and hearing this, that she got this kind of uplifting PD. And it is said that she just flew through the air, and she reached the pagoda before her parents. So she was sitting there and listening to the preaching. So when her parents saw her, they asked her how she came. And then she said, I came through the air. No, you cannot. Only the arahants could fly through the air. But he said, I don't know, but I was thinking of the Bagoda festival going on. And then next thing I knew, I flew through the air and alighted on the platform of the Bagoda. So the uplifting PT can cause body to move, to go up in the air, even though it is not easy, say, to experience uplifting PT, which can levitate your body. You may have experienced PT, which can move your body to this side or that side. Sometimes when you practice meditation and when you have this PT, your body may move here and there. So the last one is called what? Pervading PD. That means that pervades the whole body. As an inundation fills a cavern. Now we, in our countries, we use a simile of a cotton put in the oil. The surgical cotton can absorb water very easily. So you put the cotton in the oil of water, and then the oil of water is absorbed into the cotton like that. So this kind of PD is felt all through the body, the whole of the body. So it is pervading PD. Or like a flood, say, filling a cave or something like that. So all these five kinds of PD are experienced by meditators at one time or another during their practice of meditation. And here, in this jhana, the fifth PD is experienced. So PD here means not the first four, but the last one, pervading PD. So pervading, a person who is in the state of jhana experiences this pervading PD. The next is sukha. Sukha is translated as happiness. But sukha here means somanasa. Not the sukha in ahituka cetas. Here sukha means just somanasa. So, and somanasa means feeling, like vedana. So it is a feeling. So this sukha is born of detachment from sensual pleasures. So in order to get jhana, you have to avoid sensual pleasures. So this sukha is born of detachment from sensual pleasures. So it is therefore explained as niramisa sukha. That means unworldly or spiritual happiness. And then the next one is ekagata. Before we go to ekagata, we have to understand the difference between PT and sukha. They are very much alike. They arise at the same time. So their difference is also difficult to understand. But the commentaries have the similes. So PT and sukha are closely connected. They are distinguished in that. PT is a cognitive factor belonging to the aggregate of mental formations. PT is not feeling. Although we think that PT is feeling, actually PT is not feeling. It belongs to sankhara aggregate. And sukha is a feeling belonging to the aggregate of feeling. So aggregate of vedana. So first, please note this difference. PT belongs to sankhara aggregate, and sukha belongs to vedana aggregate. So that is one difference. PD is compared to the delight a weary traveler would experience when coming across an oasis, sukha to his pleasure after bathing and drinking. So PD is, that is why PD is translated as pleasurable interest. So the pleasurable interest is aroused in him when he see or when he hears about something. So here, say, a man is traveling on a journey or maybe in the forest, and then he was tired and he was thirsty or something like that. And then he may met another person, and that person would tell him that, say, at some distance, there is an oasis, or there is a forest with a pond and something like that. And so when he approached that place, he hears from the man, and then he hears the noise of birds or other people, or he may met people having enjoyed water there and coming in the opposite direction. So at all these times, he is experiencing piti. Then he reaches the place and he he bathes in the pond, and he may eat some, what was that, lotus. There are some lotus that you can eat. So he partake of whatever there is. So at that time, and then he may rest under the shade of a tree or something like that, enjoying happiness. So that at that moment he is experiencing sukha. So PD and sukha are different. PD is before enjoying, right? Sukha is enjoying. So before enjoying, you just see or hear about something, and that is PD. And when you actually enjoy it, there is sukha, because there is enjoyment, feeling. So that is the difference between PD and sukha. Although they arise at the same, mostly they arise at the same moment, at the same time, with the same type of consciousness. And the last one is called ekaggata. So eka means one, agga means a portion or something. So ekagga means having only one part, one portion. That means only one object. So ekaggata means the state of having one object. And it is also a mental factor. And in other places, it is also called samadhi. So when we say samadhi, we mean this ekaggata. Now, these five factors are highly developed when they reach the state of jhanas. These five factors and other mental factors arise with kamavacara cetas also. So with the first akusala ceta, vitaka arises, vichara arises. But they are not developed. They are not strong. But here, they are strong. They are well developed, so that they can keep the mind on the kasina object or meditation object firmly. And so these five need to be functioning properly, functioning equally, one not exceeding the other. So when they are functioning properly, in harmony, then the mind becomes so steady and firm on the object that it reaches a state of jhana. If vitaka does not take the mind to the object, vichara cannot sustain it on the object, and there can be no piti, sukha, and ekaggata. So all these five support each other. So these are the five jhana factors which accompany the first jhana consciousness. So jhana means the combination of these here in the first jhana. Jhana means combination of these five factors. And jhana factors means each one of them, vitaka, vichara, and so on. And jhana citta, jhana consciousness, means consciousness accompanied by these five factors. So now we have first jhana consciousness. Now we come to jhana. I told something about jhana last week. But there is some more to understand about jhana. So please look at the sheet, today's sheet, with the title, Two Kinds of Jhana. It is very important that you understand this. Now, jhana is twofold. Number one, that which examines closely the object. Now, the meaning of the word jhana is to observe closely, to examine closely, to meditate closely. So here we use examines closely. So that is the meaning of the word jhana. Which examines closely the object. That is one kind of jhana. And in Pali it is called Aramanupa Nijjana. And then number two, which examines closely the characteristics. Now, lakhana. The Pali word lakhana is translated as characteristic, a mark. So, which examines closely the marks, the characteristics. And that is in Pali called lakhanupa nijjana. So, there are two kinds of jhanas. Say, jhana of aramana and jhana of lakhana. Okay. What are the aramanas? Yeah. Aramana here means the objects of meditation, samatha meditation, like kasina discs, or parts of the body, or corpses, and so on. Now, the eight attainments, that means four rupa vajra jhanas and four arupa vajra jhanas, are called aramanupa nijjana. That means the first one. Because they examine closely, or they observe closely, the mental object of earth kasina, etc. Not the kasina itself, but the mental object of kasina in your mind. So the jhana consciousness takes that mental object as an object. So they are called aramanupa nijjana because they closely examine these aramanas. That means they are intensely taking that object. Now, vipassana, magga, and phala are called lakhanupa nijjana. So that is important. Whenever we find the word jhana, we think it means only rupa vajra or arupa vajra. But sometimes, vipassana can be called jhana. Magga means path, can be called jhana, and phala, fruition, also can be called jhana. So there can be a confusion if you do not know which jhana is meant in a certain context. Now, vipassana is called lakhanupa nijjana. Now, here, the lakhana, the characteristic, is closely examined. So, vipassana is so called because it examines closely the characteristics of impermanence and so on. That means the impermanence, suffering, and no-soul. These three are called characteristics. They are common characteristics of all conditioned phenomena. And when you practice vipassana meditation, you will see these three characteristics of whatever object you take at that moment. So vipassana can be called jhana because it examines closely these three characteristics. And magga is also called, is so called. We have not come to magga consciousness yet. It belongs to supramundane consciousness. So magga is so called because the work done by vipassana comes to be accomplished, comes to an end through magga. That means, when magga is attained, when magga is reached, your vipassana is finished. So magga is actually the outcome of the practice of vipassana, but magga is not a vipaka. So vipassana's work comes to an end or reaches a culmination when magga is reached, when magga is attained. So magga is also called lakkhanupa nijjana. Now, magga does not take lakkhana as object, actually, because magga takes nibbana as object. But it is called here lakkhanupa nijjana, say contemplation on lakkhana, simply because the task of vipassana, which is closely examining the three characteristics, come to an end, come to the accomplishment. So magga is also called lakkhanupa nijjana. And phala, also the vibhaga of magga, the resultant of magga. Phala is so called because it examines closely the truth of cessation, which is the characteristic of truth. Now, nibbana is called truth of cessation here. So truth of cessation, nibbana, and phala takes nibbana as object. And nibbana has the characteristic of truth. So phala is also called lakkhanupa nijjana. Here, lakkhana means characteristic of nibbana, that is, truth. But when it refers to vipassana, lakkhana means three characteristics, impermanent, suffering, and no soul. But with regard to magga and phala being called, with regard to phala being called lakkhanupa nijjana, then the word lakkhana means the characteristic of nibbana, not impermanence and so on. There is this difference. So, according to this description, jhana can mean four rupavacara jhanas, four arupavacara jhanas, and then vipassana, magga, and phala. So not that jhana means rupavacara and arupavacara jhana everywhere. Now, there is a verse in Dhammapada. You yourselves must make the effort. Tathagatas are only proclaimers or teachers, those who have entered the path and examined closely by jhanas will get free from the bond of Mara. Now, here the word jhana is used. Actually, the Pali word is jayino. That means those who experience jhanas. Now, those who practice jhana, who experience jhana, will get free from the bond of Mara. That means will become enlightened, will become arahants. If we take jhana to mean just rupa vajra jhana and arupa vajra jhana, it doesn't make sense here. Because you have to practice vipassana meditation in order to become enlightened. That is why the commentary said here that two kinds of jhanas, right? Tathagatas are merely those who proclaim, hence those who have stepped on to the path in accordance with what they proclaimed and examined closely by two kinds of jhanas. So when the commentary said two kinds of jhanas, we must understand that he was referring to those two, Aramanupa nijjana and lakkhanupa nijjana. So in this verse, we must understand that that person practices maybe both samatha and vipassana. If you do not understand this, you'll be confused here. Why saying jhanas to mean vipassana or something like that? So, now two kinds of jhana. But here, in this manual and in Abhidhamma, jhana will mean only rupa vajra and arupa vajra, right? Okay. So this is Prathama Jhana, first jhana consciousness. First because it is first attained. And also it comes first when Buddha taught. Okay, then second jhana. Now, attainment of jhanas is something like you go to school and say you get grades, you get examinations, and you get higher and higher. So before you finish high school, you want to finish high school. And finishing high school is great for you at that time. Then after you have finished high school, you don't think it is great. So you want to go higher, right? So you go to the university and you get a bachelor degree. But after getting the bachelor degree, you think, it's not so good. Huh? There is a higher degree. Master's degree. After getting master's degree, you want to go further, PhD, and maybe not only single PhD, and double PhD, and so on. So in the same way, a person who has attained the first jhana may not be satisfied with just first jhana. He may want to attain the higher jhanas. So in order to do that, what must he do? In order to attain higher jhanas, what must he do? Now, first, he must make himself very familiar with this first jhana. That means he must be able to get into it the moment he wants. He must be able to get out of it the moment he wants. He must be able to be in that jhana for as long as he wishes, a minute or maybe a day. So he must have that mastery over this jhana. He must practice the first jhana again and again and again until he gains mastery over it. So after gaining mastery over it, he enters into the jhana and then review the jhana factors. So when he review the jhana factors, he begins to find fault with vitakka. In Visuddhimagga, four jhanas are given, and so it says vitakka and vichara together. So let's say now vitakka is gross. It appears to him as gross, and vichara and others appear to him as peaceful. So when he sees that vitakka is gross and this first jhana is near to the enemies of hindrances, he lost craving, or he lost attachment for vitakka. So he wants to get rid of vitakka. So with that desire to get rid of vitakka, he practices again on the meditation object, like and so on. And so when he gets the second jhana, according to his wish, and according to his, as a result of his willpower, vitakka was left behind. So vitakka no longer arises with the second jhana. So there are only four jhana factors. So the higher jhanas are attained by eliminating the grosser jhana factors. We call them gross and subtle, or gross and peaceful, but actually these jhana factors are very highly developed. But to him, it appears as gross because it is nearer to the mental hindrances, and also since it takes the mind to the object, it is conducive to agitation. So long as there is vitakka, there is a danger to go to fall back with mental hindrances and to lose the jhana. So he finds fault with vitakka and loses interest in vitakka, and then he thinks that vichara and others are better, and so he tries to retain those four. And so when the jhana arises as a result of his meditation, Vitaka does not arise. So there are only four jhana factors, vichara, piti, sukha, and ekagata. The same with others. So after getting second jhana, he finds fault with vichara also. Vichara is a friend of vitaka, and these two are agitating factors. So long as these two are there, there is also always danger. So now he wants to get rid of vichara. So he practices meditation again, and as a result of his meditation, when the next jhana consciousness arises, there is no vichara. So only piti, sukha, and ekagata. That is what? Third jhana. Now, piti in jhana is very, very refined, but still, he finds fault with it. Piti has also a tendency to agitation. So when you are elated, say when you have piti, you are something like that. So it makes mind also shaky. So he finds fault with piti. Sukha is better. Sukha is more peaceful. So I will eliminate piti, something like that. So he practices meditation again, and when the next jhana consciousness arises, there is no piti. So now only sukha and ekagata, a very refined sukha and ekagata. But still, sukha is close to piti, and piti is close to vijara and vitaka, and so it may drag him back to mental hindrances. And ekagata is very peaceful, very stable and very peaceful. And so he loses interest in sukha also. And so he practices meditation, and when the next jhana consciousness arises, that consciousness is accompanied by upekkha, not sukha, not somanasa. He finds fault with somanasa also, right? Nowadays, we are going after somanasa. We want to be happy, right? Whatever we do, wherever we go, in whatever situation we are in, we want to be happy. And we talk about happiness, and we think of it very much, because we have not experienced the very high form of happiness. But here, this person who has attained the fourth jhana even finds fault with happiness. So happiness is also a little agitating. So long as it is there, mind can be shaken. So I will eliminate it and instead get upekkha, equanimity. So when the fifth jhana arises, it is accompanied by upekkha. And accompanied by how many factors? Two jhana factors. So, first jhana is accompanied by how many factors? Five. Second jhana, four. Third jhana, three. Fourth jhana, two. Sukha and ekagata. And fifth jhana, also two. Upekkha and ekagata. So, the factors are eliminated one by one. But between fourth and fifth, there are two jhana factors, but different factors. Instead of sukha, there is upekkha and fifth jhana. These are the types of consciousness experienced by people. I mean, non-enlightened, and also those who are enlightened but who are not yet arahants. I think we talk about the word sikha, right? Trainees. Now, if a person gets, say, one of these five jhanas, and he dies with these jhanas intact, that means he is able to enter into this jhana easily, then he will be reborn in the world of Brahmas, in the 31 planes of existence. The first 11 are sense fear, right? And then there are 16 which are called Brahma, form Brahma. And then above them, four are called formless or immaterial Brahmas. So if a person gets the first jhana here, and he dies with that jhana intact, he will be reborn in the Rupa Vajra form Brahmas. And at the rebirth as a Brahma, the consciousness, the first consciousness, the rebirth consciousness arising there is the resultant of this first jhana. So first jhana gives the first jhana resultant. Same way, second jhana gives the second jhana resultant and so on. So they give identical results, these rupa vajra chetas, not like kama vajra kusalas. Kama vajra kusala chetas may give both identical and non-identical results. So you'll find them in the fifth chapter. But these five rupa vajra kusalas and also arupa vajra kusalas, they give identical results. So if a person gets the first jhana here and dies with this jhana intact, then his rebirth consciousness as a Brahma will be the first jhana resultant consciousness. The same with if a person gets a second jhana and so on. So there are, just as there are five wholesome form sphere consciousness, there are five wholesome resultant form sphere consciousness. I mean, not wholesome, resultant form sphere consciousness. So the same as in the chart, the same as Rupa Vajra Kusala. So we should say first jhana consciousness with vitaka, vichara, pidi, sukha, and ekagda, and so on and so on. So these five resultant consciousness arise only in the world of Brahmas. They do not arise in the sense sphere. So these five resultant consciousness will not arise in human beings. They will arise only in the minds of Brahmas. Now, the next five is Rupa Vajra Kiriya Chittas. Now, what is Kiriya? Just happening, just doing. Now, Kiriya Chittas can arise only in what? Arahants, right? Yeah. So, when a person, after becoming an arahant, practices, say, kasina meditation, and he gets the jhana, then his jhana is said to be rupa vajra kiriya chitta. First jhana rupa vajra chitta. The same with second, third, fourth, and fifth. So the kiriya chittas are for arahants only. That means Buddhas and arahants. Buddhas, paccika Buddhas and arahants only. So altogether, we have 15 rupa vajra chetas, 15 form sphere chetas, 5 wholesome, 5 resultant, and 5 functional, right? The 5 wholesome can arise in sense sphere and also in form sphere. But the second 5 can arise only in form sphere. The third can arise in sense sphere and also in form sphere. And the third 5 are experienced by arahants only. Now, in the texts, and also in Dhammasangani also, jhanas, when Buddha described jhana, he used different, what do you call it, different description. I want you to be familiar with that too. So please turn to description of jhanas in the texts. In the manual, in the manual we are studying, jhanas are described by way of their factors. Say, vitakka, vichara, first jhana consciousness with vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata, and so on. But when Buddha described jhanas in the text, in the discourses, as well as in Abhidhamma, he describes in another way. Not all the factors are mentioned in the description. So, there are first jhana, quite secluded from sense pleasures, quite secluded from unwholesome states, a monk attains and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by initial application. Now you find one jhana factor, accompanied by sustained application, another factor, is born of seclusion, is with rapture, piti, and happiness, sukha. Or is with rapture and happiness, which are born of seclusion. So here, how many jhana factors do you find? Vitakka, vichara, piti, and sukha. No ekagata is mentioned here, right? Yeah. But we must understand that without ekagata, there can be no jhana. Second jhana, with the non-appearance of initial application and sustained application. Oh, I must have told you the fourfold jhana method first, but let's say, I'll go to that data. So here, in order to get to second jhana, the monk will eliminate two at the same time, vitakka and vichara at the same time. So here, with the non-appearance of initial application and sustained application, he attains and dwells in the second jhana, which is internal, clarifying, makes singleness of mind grow, and is without initial application and sustained application, is born of concentration, and is with rapture and happiness. So here, piti and sukha are mentioned, right? Vitakka, vichara are mentioned, but they are eliminated factors. So only piti and sukha are mentioned. Okay, let's look at the third jhana. With the disgusting of rapture as well as of its disappearance, or with the overcoming of rapture as well as disappearance of initial application and sustained application, he dwells in equanimity, upekkha, is mindful and clearly comprehending, and he experiences happiness, sukha, with his body and mind. He attains and dwells in the third jhana, on account of which the noble ones announce, he is with equanimity, is mindful, and dwells in happiness. How many jhana factors do you find here? Huh? What are three? Do you find sukha? Yeah. Sukha. No, you do not find rapture. Rapture is mentioned, but it is eliminated. Yeah. Equanimity, happiness. That's all. Oh, yeah. This is the third jhana, right? Now, equanimity here does not mean indifferent feeling. It is another mental factor. We have not gone to the second chapter yet. So, the word upekkha is used for indifferent feeling as well as for that mental factor. One mental factor. It is translated as equanimity because it does not fall into either side. It stays in the middle. So that is called, in Pali, called tatra majjhadada. So we'll come to that in the second chapter. So here, equanimity means not feeling upekkha. It is another kind of upekkha. So we find only one factor here, right? Happiness. And then fourth jhana, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain and with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, he attains and dwells in the fourth jhana, which is neither accompanied by pain nor by pleasure and is with purity of mindfulness caused by equanimity. Here also equanimity is tatra majjhadana. So here no jhana factor is mentioned. So this is how Buddha described jhana, both in discourses and in Abhidhamma. Now, in the discourses, almost always, four jhanas are mentioned, not five. But in Abhidhamma, four jhanas as well as five jhanas are mentioned, because Abhidhamma deals with what is there, and so it has to be complete. So in Abhidhamma, full method, that means four jhanas are mentioned, and also five jhanas are mentioned. But in the discourses, only four jhanas are mentioned. Now you may read the jhanas in different discourses, and you will find only four of them. For example, in the second discourse in Digha Nikaya, only four will be mentioned there. So, please turn to page 58 and the bottom paragraph. Although the suttas do not mention the fivefold analysis of jhana in explicit terms, they provide an implicit basis for this analysis in the Buddha's distinction between three kinds of concentration. In some suttas, Buddha mentions three kinds of concentrations. That means three kinds of jhanas. And they are concentration accompanied by both initial application and sustained application. Next, concentration without initial application but with sustained application. And third, concentration with neither initial application nor sustained application. So Buddha mentioned three kinds of samadhis, three kinds of concentration. The first is obviously the first jhana in both systems. So there is no problem here. The first concentration here, which is accompanied by both vitakka and vichara. And the third means without initial application and sustained application. So what jhanas are without initial application and sustained application? Third, fourth, and fifth, right? In the fourfold method, it is second, third, and fourth. We'll come to that later. So, the second, however, is nowhere clarified within the suttas themselves. So, in the suttas, only four are mentioned. So, among these four, there is no concentration which meets the description here. That is, concentration without initial application, but sustained application. So, although five jhanas are not mentioned explicitly in the suttas, but in some suttas, Buddha implicitly mentioned five jhanas. Because if we do not take jhanas to be five, the second kind of concentration will be meaningless. Because in the fourfold method, the first is with vitakka and vichara, the second without vitakka and vichara, that fourth also without vitakka and vichara. So there is jhana with vitakka and vichara and without vitakka and vichara. But there is no jhana which is with vitaka, without vitaka, but with vichara. If we take jhana to be four jhanas. So, although Buddha did not mention five jhanas one by one in the suttas, according to that division of concentration into three kinds, then there must be what is called the second jhana in the fivefold method. So please turn to the page where fourfold and fivefold method jhanas are shown. Factors in jhanas. So I should have gone at that first. So factors in jhanas. Fivefold method and fourfold method. So fivefold method means five jhanas method, and fourfold means four jhana method. We are studying the manual, so we are more familiar with the fivefold method, which is mentioned in the manual. So according to that, you already understand, right? First jhana has vitaka, vichara, pihiti, sukha, and ekagata, five factors. Second jhana has vichara, pihiti, sukha, and ekagata. And third jhana has pihiti, sukha, ekagata. Fourth jhana, sukha, ekagata. Fifth jhana, ubhikha, ekagata. In the fourfold method, the second jhana or fivefold method is lost. Because in the fourfold method, vitaka and vichara are eliminated at one stroke, not one by one. So when vitaka and vichara are eliminated one by one, there comes to be five jhanas. But there are individuals whose samadhi, whose concentration and whose wisdom are so strong that they are able to eliminate two at one time. So for them, there are only four jhanas. So for them, the second jhana would be without both vitaka and vichara, right? So the third jhana, so their second jhana corresponds to the third jhana in fivefold method, right? And then their third jhana corresponds to fourth jhana and fivefold method, and their fifth jhana corresponds to the fifth jhana and fivefold method. So there are these two methods, fivefold method and fourfold method. If you understand fivefold method, you can easily understand fourfold method. So, in the suttas, fourfold method is already met with, but not the fivefold method explicitly. But, as I said again and again, when Buddha divided concentration into three, he said, there is concentration which is without vitaka, but with vichara. So according to fourfold method, that cannot be found, right? There is a blank in the column fourfold method, because it must not have vitaka, but it must have vichara. So that is a second jhana in the fivefold method. And in the fourfold method, there is nothing. So, so we can say that Buddha taught both fourfold method and fivefold method even in the discourses or even in the suttas. So the rupavacara cetas are said to be those that are attained, I mean higher jhanas, that are attained by eliminating the jhana factors. There will come, we'll have to talk about a difference between rupavacara cetas and arupavacara cetas later. So arupavacara cetas are not like that. They have a different order. So in order to get the higher jhanas in rupavacara cetas, one has to eliminate what are called the growth factors one by one, or say two at a time, like that. So the object remains the same for these jhanas. For example, a person gets first jhana with earth kasina, then his second jhana will be also take the earth kasina also. So if he gets all five jhanas or up until the fifth jhana, the object may be the same. What are different there are the mental jhana factors. So in the rupa vajra jhanas, the difference is the number of jhana factors. But the object is the same. But in the formless status, they will be different. And when a person is in the state of jhana, say he is very peaceful and he is in real happiness. And in one Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, Buddha explained that. So that is given at the bottom of the page, description of jhanas in the text. On such an occasion, he does not strive for his own affliction or for another's affliction or for the affliction of both. So when a person is in jhana, he does not do anything, say, to harm him or to harm another or to harm both him and another. On that occasion, he feels only feeling that is free from affliction. So he feels only feeling that is sukha. So that is somanasa. Gratification in the case of feeling has freedom from affliction as its highest aspect. That is, freedom from affliction is the highest aspect of the gratification in the case of feeling. That means freedom from affliction is the best kind of feeling, that is sukha. But as you know, upekkha is better and higher than sukha. Okay. So please read the manual. And in manual there is mention made of whether the jhana chetas are prompted or unprompted and so on. So I don't want to dwell on this because nobody is sure. One author saying one thing and another author saying another. And we don't know whom to side with. So it's better ignored. And it will not affect our understanding of the jhanas. So I just want to ignore it. So instead of finding out whether they are prompted or unprompted, so you can read in the manual if you want to. Okay. You have questions?
When going through the path of insight, is it possible not to go through the jhanas but to still experience Magadha and
Yes, yeah.
And what's the difference whether you experience jhana or not?
Whenever Buddha described a monk progressing along the spiritual path, he always mentioned jhanas. That is why some people take it to mean that you must first practice jhana before you practice vipassana. But that is not true. Jhana is for strong concentration and also for some psychic powers. If one has jhana, and after jhana, he can move to vipassana very easily because he has practiced concentration, and so he get good concentration. So the moment he changes to vipassana, he can take the objects without being distracted. because he had experience of keeping his mind on the object. But when we practice vipassana first, as we all do here, we have to develop that kind of concentration, because our minds goes out here and there very often. And so if we can get jhana first, then it would be easier to move to vipassana. But trying to get jhana may take much long time. That is why people are not interested in doing jhana before they practice vipassana. But the path and fruition can be attained without the jhanas. So there are people who are called dry vipassana practitioners. That means those who practice vipassana only. And the others are called practitioners of samatha. That means practitioners of both samatha and vipassana. And there is one discourse in the Anguttara Nikaya where it is explained that you can practice samatha first and then do vipassana, or you can practice vipassana, and in vipassana there is a kind of samatha. The kasinas are taken as object mostly for the psychic powers. So there is a difference in the results obtained from different kinds of kasina. For example, say after getting the abhinya, supernormal power, say if you want to fly through the air, then you have to make yourself lighter, right? So you have to get into jhana with, say, air kasina as object or fire kasina as object. Then if you want to give out smoke, then you have to enter into fire kasina and so on. So in that case, there is difference of results from the practice of kasina meditation and others.
What do you mean when a person who has practiced, and I assume mastered the jhanas, that when they die and the jhanas are still intact?
Right.
What does that mean?
Yeah, the intact means just he's able to enter into jhana. Sometimes a person gets jhana at one time. In his life, and then he may give it up. He may not do it anymore, and so he is not able to get into the jhana at that moment. So, such a person is called one who has lost his jhana.
Is that still vedic karma or kama? You know, at death, does that cause a cause for vedic karma?
It does not. Amount to a weighty karma because he has lost it. So although he had gained jhana at one time, since it is not with him at that time, I mean, he is not able to enter into it, it does not become a weighty karma for him. So he may not be reborn as in a Brahma world. I think we should call it Buddhist practice because Buddha mentioned jhanas again and again. But many people think that the jhanas are, they have sources in Hindu practices. But there are people who even say that Buddha did not teach jhanas. So these are added later by monks under the influence of, say, Vedic practices. But I cannot agree with that, because now you have read the description of first, second jhana and so on. I don't think there is such a detailed explanation of jhanas in the Vedic literature. There is mention of jhanas there, or dhyanas, but not as systematic and as detailed as in the Buddhist description of jhanas. So I have some doubt whether the jhanas as mentioned in the Buddhist literature, Buddhist suttas, are in the Hindu books. So when Buddha Bodhisattva went to Alara and Uduga, he got the instructions for the attainment of the third and the fourth Arupa Vajrayana respectively. And many people describe those teachers as Vedic teachers. But nowhere in our book this mentions that they are Vedic teachers. They are just teachers. So we do not really know whether they belong to Vedic religion or to some other religion or some other practice, some other faith. That we are not sure. So it is not, I think, safe to say that they are Vedic teachers. They may or they may not.
There's also, aside from the fact of the result of concentration of mind and samatha practice and the skills it gives to vipassana, the bringing the mind to the object, the vitakka vichara, is there any time in the Rupa Jhanas that you can, maybe even through Upeka, is there a possibility of being able to use equanimity jhana in a vipassana way, having begun with samatha as the object?
Now, the difference between samatha and vipassana as regards...
I'm just a switch.
Yeah, no, as regards object is... Most samatha meditations, most kinds of samatha meditation take concepts as object, but vipassana takes reality as object. So that is different. So if a person has attained the first jhana here, taking kasina as object, he cannot take that same kasina as the object of vipassana meditation. So he can take the factors of jhana themselves or the jhana consciousness themselves as the object of vipassana. So that is a difference. So maybe just difference of technique or something like that.
And you, I think, also said that jhanas are not, I'm still ignorant about the word, but resultant. And I seem to remember the legendary story about the Buddha as a child watching his father plowing the field, and he fell into what I think was described as second jhana. Could you care to make a comment about that?
Yeah, it is said in our books that the child, see, when he was left alone, so the child just sat up, and then he practiced breathing meditation, anapanasati meditation, and he attained the first jhana then. It is first jhana. And then it may taper off, and then he had no recollection of that until during the time when he was practicing austerities in the forest, right? So while, say, after spending almost 6 years modifying his body, and he could not make any progress, he reviewed his practice and he found it to be wrong. And then at that time, he remembered that incident. So when I was a child and when my father was doing plowing ceremony, I got into that practice, and I felt very peaceful at that time. So that must be the correct way. So he decided that, and then decided to practice meditation again. But he was so emaciated, he was so thin and so weak that he had to take food again first. So it was at that time that the five disciples left him in disgust.
So it didn't occur spontaneously. It actually occurred as a result of he as a youngster doing anapana.
Yes.
Was
Oh no, that was not vipaka. That is kusala jhana. Wholesome.
When I heard mention about some people might lose their mental stability due to meditation, is that one of the dangers with samatha meditation?
Mostly, yes. Yeah. In samatha meditation, when the frightening signs appear to the meditator, he may not know what to do about them. And so he may lose stability of mind, or he may even go insane or something like that. But in vipassana, we are instructed to how to deal with these objects. That means just pay attention to these objects. And so we are able to treat them with mindfulness, and so they do not have bad effects on our minds. But in samatha, there is no such teaching. You just keep on the object and be mindful of it, just that. When these frightening signs appear to him, he doesn't know what to do. Okay. Shall we share merits? This is great merit, right? Buddha said is the greatest of gifts is Dhamma gift. So Dhamma gift, giving Dhamma and also accepting Dhamma is a great gift. So let us share merits. Please repeat after me. May all beings share this merit.
May all beings share this merit.
Which we have thus acquired.
Which we have thus acquired.
For the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth.
Deities and others of mighty power.
Share this merit of ours. May they long protect the teachings.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.